Welcome back to the Stoplight Approach podcast, where brain science is made simple. I'm your host, Sarah Ganger. And we took a very unexpected week off from recording last week. Didn't plan or schedule that, but life happens. So I am back here to discuss Chapter 9 with my husband, Tim. Thanks for being here.
I'm glad to be here with you.
And we actually did get a question that got sent in from a listener. This was a question about Chapter 7, and the question was about punishment versus discipline, and specifically asking about punishment and rewards coming from the same root or the same desire, which is extrinsic motivation. So extrinsic motivation, external, EX, it's that same root. So something outside of me extrinsically is motivating my behavior or motivating my choices. And so with punishment, the extrinsic motivation, the thing that's coming from outside me, is fear of punishment. What's going to happen to me if I make this choice? But with rewards, what's coming from outside of me is what could I get if I make this choice? But it's the same side, or it's two sides of the same coin, which is externally, something outside of me is motivating my behavior. And so the kind of opposite of that is what is known as intrinsic motivation. So something inside of me, my own sense of who I am, my identity, my values, what's important to me, that comes from the inside, and that's what's motivating my behavior. And the reason that discipline, that training, coaching, discipling, coming alongside, what we're doing when we use that approach is we're actually shaping our child's values. We're shaping who they are, so that intrinsically what will come out of them is hopefully good choices and good behavior and ways of being in the world that are helpful and kind and responsible. And we're going to talk actually a little bit more about intrinsic motivation a little bit later on this episode. So it was a good question that came in because it ties in well with this episode. So we'll revisit it in a little bit. But from Chapter 9, Roots of Misbehavior, was there, you know, a quote or something that stuck out to you from this chapter about the roots of misbehavior?
Yeah, I think the quote that really stuck out to me was in this chapter was that the stoplight approach is rarely a formula. And I think that that's one of those issues that I know that I personally struggle with, and I think is a really common refrain amongst parents. You know, we jokingly say, "Where's the instruction manual?" And the reality is that there's not one. But even if there was one, it would always be in the process of being written. And I think that really stuck out to me. Especially because so often that's what we want to do. We want to know what's the right thing for me to do in this situation. And so that way, every single time this situation comes up, I know exactly what to do. And that's just so often not the case. And I think that's part of what the feeling is many times from a lot of other more traditional parenting books is, if blank happens, respond with blank. Yeah. That it's very orderly, it's very systematic. And I think that that's what can be part of the struggle with stoplight, is stoplight instead gives you principles and it gives you guidance and it gives you ways to evaluate and way to think about things. But in other words, it requires a lot of me. It requires a lot of you as the caregiver in whatever capacity that is. And I think so many times, like, that feels really frustrating. I just want to know the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Or I just want to know what the wrong thing to do is, so I don't do that. And I think, though, once again, this really helps us to zoom in on something that we already know, but I think so often we can get lost in, is that every single one of our children are unique. Yeah. And since they're unique, they just aren't going to fit in to the general principles rule manual. And instead, we're going to have to really work through some things. We're going to have to look at that child. We're going to have to investigate, why did they do the thing that they did? Is this kind of like the analogy we used before? Is this smoke or is this fire? And I think in some ways, I think is getting back down, which she speaks about at the beginning of the chapter, is what is the motivation? Like, is this actually coming from green brain or yellow brain or red brain? And those are places where we have to more deeply examine what's going on, rather than snapping our fingers or knowing instantaneously what page to go on in our user manual to fix said problem, rather than seeing that all of this is really about a relationship. And therefore, it's going to cause work for us, but with the end goal of helping our kids or the kids that are in our care to grow and change and transform into people who one day they will be.
Yeah, that that's so important. And I feel like that idea of like each child being unique just really flies in the face of a formula. Like, there's just no way to put a formula on all children when they're each unique. You know, like the formula for a triangle is the formula for a triangle because all triangles are the same.
That's right.
But you can't do that with a child because all children are different. And so, yeah, Stoplight giving you sort of a way of looking at things, a way of seeing. We talk a lot at Stoplight about putting on your Stoplight glasses, which really works for both of us because we both wear glasses.
That's true.
And so we understand the experience of taking off our glasses and not really being able to see clearly, and then putting on our glasses, and all of a sudden we can see things clearly. And so for people who wear glasses, maybe that's a helpful analogy is, you know, Stoplight helps you see things more clearly. Because you can look at not just the behavior, which is what's on the surface, but you can actually sort of imagine inside your child's brain and say, okay, like what brain state are they in? Are they in green, yellow, or red? Okay, I'm going to tailor my response for what their actual brain state is, rather than just the outside behavior of what I'm seeing. And this reminds me, we were out somewhere yesterday with a group of friends, and I saw two little boys, and we're good friends with these people, so I felt like I could do this. But I saw two little boys sort of roughhousing. They were kind of chasing each other, and there was like some grabbing and shoving, and I wasn't sure, like, if this was like they were, you know, upset and trying to hurt each other, or if they were just playing and having fun. And so I just got down on their level, and I just, you know, looked at one of the little boys and I said, "Are you having fun? Are you playing?" And he was like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And so then I looked at the other little boys, "Are you having fun? Are you playing?" And they're like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." I was like, "Okay, well, let's be safe." You know, so I didn't have to correct them. I just wanted to check in and make sure that both of them felt safe, that both of them were playing, and that it was okay with both of them, because their play did look a little rough to me, but it was fine. They were both in green brain. They were both happy. Neither one of them was distressed or upset. And so it was just a moment where I could just check in and see, like, okay, this looks like it could be red or yellow behavior, but I'm going to just get down and investigate. It's such a good word, like what's going on, rather than assuming that I know what this is rooted in. So yeah, that's just so helpful. So she talks a lot about kind of this proactive parenting, you know, kind of on the front end, like almost before the misbehavior, like getting ahead of it. And she talks about routine and guidance and clear expectations. And so I was going to see, was there one of those that kind of stuck out to you or that you found really helpful in our family, and what has that looked like?
Yeah, I actually love this. This is my other quote that I thought was really helpful, is she says that a huge part of parenting is in prevention. And I thought that was really funny, because I feel like what a lot of people think about parenting is correction. Mm-hmm. That's actually what parenting is. It's correction. But thinking about it this way is that if you're really on the front side of it, then really we're actually preventing issues from becoming issues. Mm-hmm. And I thought that these things were particularly helpful. I know one thing that's been really helpful for our family has been routine. Yeah. In fact, routine is really helpful for me as a person as well. But that we would always have a very simple to follow routine when our kids were younger, mm-hmm. where we would eat dinner around the same time. We would check on schoolwork around the same time. We would have some playtime. We would have kind of baths, those kind of things, get ready for bed. And then we would have a really similar routine for when they went to bed, and we had a routine, and so our kids knew what to expect, and it was comforting for them. They really liked it. And as our kids have gotten older, our routines had to change. And so she makes note in the book that routines are really helpful, but you also need to have some level of freedom to change things. I think it's especially true as your kids get older, and you have to morph some as they change. But we even do that now as our kids are older, in that they come home and have a snack because they're usually hungry from the school day. Then we do a homework check. Not because we're going to do homework immediately, but because we need to know what's in front of us. Our kids usually have some screen time. It's a set amount of time that they can do that. And then we will do homework typically while one of the two of us is involved in making dinner. And so sometimes the kids help with that, depending on what the meal is. And then we'll eat dinner, hopefully finish up any homework, or give the kids just, once again, some time to relax, enjoy themselves. And then this is kind of where the variety comes in, is that the rules for school are you have to have all your stuff packed, and you have to be clean. And so if you choose to do both of those things the night before, if you choose to do one of those things before bedtime and the other one the next morning, that's fine. We give our kids the freedom to do that, but they know they can't walk out of this house smelling bad or not having all of their things with them. But we've given our kids the freedom to be able to kind of make their own guidelines in that. And so that's helped with their buy-in, because they have a level of freedom to say, do this or do that, or to say, you know, I'm really tired, I want to go to bed, I'm just going to do both in the morning, or I'd rather sleep in for a little bit, and so I'd rather have them both done. But I've noticed that even that routine helps so much. Like, they know what to expect. Now, they don't always love it, mm-hmm. but at the same time, when it gets to that point, they know what to go do, and it helps them to wind down and know, okay, this is time for bed, because I've got to get up in the morning and kind of start my morning routine that I can do everything to get ready for school.
Yeah. And it's interesting, as our kids have gotten older, like, our routine has definitely changed. And, especially in the evening, sometimes our kids have different appointments. Sometimes there's like an after school club or something that they stay late for, and that kind of pushes the routine back a little bit. So it's not necessarily that, like, the timing is always precise or exactly the same, but it's more just this sort of checklist. Like, these mm-hmm. are the things that we do in the evening. Mm-hmm. And it's just part of our daily routine to make sure that we, the needs are getting met in our family. Everybody has what they need to have and has kind of taken care of the things that are mm-hmm. important. She does talk in the routines about transitions, which mm-hmm. I think is so important. There's so many kids, and we have a couple that really, yeah. really struggle with transitions. And I was thinking back, like, when our kids were a lot younger, we would have to give, kind of mm-hmm. 10-minute warning, 5-minute warning. And then often, even before we would start whatever activity that we knew would be hard to transition out of, usually something fun, like a playtime or a mm-hmm. show, or, some sort of, like, video game or something, we would have to go through when we tell you it's time to turn it off, what are you going to say? Mm-hmm. How are you going to do it? And we would have the child, like, act out the mm-hmm. the right way to be done with whatever activity they were doing, mm-hmm. just to kind of, like, get it in their mind, like, This is what it's going to look like when I turn it off. I'm going to do it the right way now. So when that end comes, like I'll have practiced it and I'll be ready to do it the right way. And so that was another one of those like proactive things that we used to do. Something from the proactive parenting that really stuck out to me was the clear expectations. And she talks about her family mission statement and this goes back to that sort of intrinsic motivation. You know, the family mission statement gives us an identity as a family. This is who we are. Mm-hmm. This is like, these are my people, and this is how my people act. And mm-hmm. because I am one of my people, I am a member of my family, I am part of this group, this is how I act, this is how I behave, this is how I treat people. And so having that family mission statement, it just is built in expectations mm-hmm. for how we're going to treat one another in our family, and then also how we're going to treat people outside of our family and the type of behavior we're going to have towards one another and the type of behavior we're going to have towards people outside of our family. And, you know, as you kind of rehearse that and as you practice what that looks like to whether, you know, her words were loving, caring, and sharing. So as you practice, mm-hmm. what does it look like to be loving? What does it look like to be caring? What does it look like to be sharing? Then it becomes a part of who I am. Mm-hmm. Like, these are my people. This is what we do. Because we are these type of people, we do these things. And so that's where the intrinsic motivation comes from. It's not something happening outside of me. Mm-hmm. Like, if I don't meet these expectations, I'm going to be punished. That's not what's happening. Like, my identity is being transformed because of this group of people that I belong to that have a certain way of being in the mm-hmm. world. And so the expectations come from a sense of like, this is who we are. This is who I am because I'm a part of this group. And and that kind of intrinsic motivation develops to like be who I am.
Yeah. And I think that what you just said there was so important is it develops.
Develops, yeah.
I think that's what's so important is that, you know, is one second, we're teaching them a skill. Mm-hmm. For the future, but the skill is really learning who they are, mm-hmm. and so once they have that identity down, that really is molded when they're younger, that really allows them to move forward with confidence because they do have clear expectations about who they are, and they are intrinsically motivated to be that person. Mm-hmm. And it just reminded me of one of our family sayings. From when our kids were so young, which was ganger stick together. And we would say that so often because having four little ones anywhere we went.
It's like herding cats.
It was like herding cats, yeah. I mean, we joked that, I joked that I wish that all of our kids had lights on them so that I could just at any moment press a color light and that child's light would pop up on the ceiling so I knew where they were. But it was remarkable to me to think like that was one of our kind of family sayings. Mm-hmm. But looking at our kids now, how deeply that stuck into their mentality that we stick together. Mm-hmm. And so we don't in some ways have to worry about that. Like, we know that like our kids actually look out for each other in terms like of location, but also in terms of like care for each other. Like they love each other, they want good things for each other. And I think a lot of that stemmed from we stick together. That's what we do as a family. Mm-hmm. And not just in terms of location, but also in terms of like through life. And that really helped, I think, form kind of identity for our kids and for our family. As our kids were younger, and that we've really seen it grow into fruition as they've gotten older.
Yeah, and it's funny that gangers stick together. Like, I still say that. Like, they're big now, and I still, you know, now when they go out on their own, which is bizarre that we have kids old enough that are going out on their own, but I'll just kind of like remind them as they're walking out the door, gangers stick together, you know, and it really has evolved from a sense of like physically sticking together, which is true, which is still mm-hmm. what we want, but then also this sense of like relationally, we are stuck together. We are part of each other. We belong together, and creating that sense of belonging that, like, you always have your people who have your back, you know? I think about it, unless you have any other thoughts, something else that stuck out from the chapter that you want to share.
No, that's really great. Yeah. Maybe
cover it. All right. Well, we will be back next week to talk about chapter 9. And again, if you have any questions and would like to send them in to podcasts, that's podcasts with an S, at thestoplightapproach.org, then we would be happy to do our best to answer those questions. And I said chapter 9, but I meant chapter 10. So we'll be discussing chapter 10 next week. And I hope you can join us then.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Stoplight Approach podcast. Please share, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, as it will help other people to find us. The Stoplight Approach offers many resources to help families, schools, churches, and other groups to grow in their understanding of the brain and relationships. Please visit www.thestoplightapproach.org